1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a beautiful Saturday. I know the weather's been a little gloomy the past couple of days, but I think we're going to still have a great day, and we're going to make it even a little bit better just by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so, please welcome from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
Here we are at the not halfway point, but getting through the Labor Day weekend, which is the kind of official, unofficial end of summer. And I got to tell you, I love long weekends. Tuesdays back at work always feel like a bonus because you've only got a 4-day work week. And I've been basking in the Americana in a way that I don't always. I went and I had McDonald's for lunch. Hadn't had that in a while, so I got the good American experience there. And then I had to stop at the gas station on my way home, and I heard "Try That in a Small Town" playing on the radio for the first time ever. So I feel very patriotic this morning, Julio. This afternoon.
Does that song make you feel patriotic?
It makes me feel something.
What does it make you feel?
Uncomfortable, honestly, would be the best word for it. Kind of like the way digesting McDonald's makes me feel. It's like a weird feeling in the pit of my stomach. You can't really explain it. It's music in the same way that McDonald's is food. You know what I mean? Like, technically, you eat it or you listen to it, and you can't deny that, like, the elements are there, but it just sits wrong in your body.
So you're saying it sustains you, but it doesn't fulfill you.
That very well said. Absolutely. You know, it's been an interesting summer, and I don't think that we can discount and this is kind of a swerve, but I think Taylor Swift ties into this conversation about Americana really well. But we have seen what a dominant force the younger female demographic can be, whether we're talking about Barbie just now crossing $600 million in the domestic box office, or we're talking about this completely unprecedented tour that Taylor Swift is on right now. And it's kind of an interesting phenomenon, Julio. I think for years, people have really squarely targeted the 18 to 34 male demographic as your primary spenders. Do you think this is going to force people to reconsider who they're targeting stuff to?
Well, I mean, let's not assume that the audience for either of the things you mentioned is monolithically young females.
I think that's fair.
I think that they probably are a very large, substantial chunk of the audience for those things. But I do know plenty of male Swifties.
And hey, we loved Barbie, so definitely point taken there. And maybe Taylor Swift is an intergenerational talent. You think that there's moms and daughters that both kind of grew up with Taylor Swift?
I mean, I guess that's possible. I didn't realize until I was speaking with a friend of mine last night who is a major Swiftie and who is male and in his 30s or maybe even early 40s. I think 30s.
Oh, now. I was about to say, tell Andy hello.
But no, it wasn't Andy. It wasn't our friend Andy Metzger. It was another friend. But I guess she's 10 albums into her career.
When she was 16. I feel like maybe 2006.
Yeah, but she's still fairly young, right? She's like in her early 30s.
33.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, that's pretty impressive, you know, to have that many. And I know she put out like two or three albums during the pandemic that were like kind of homespun kind of stuff.
Sure.
And let's keep in mind too that that's not taking into account all of these re-recording albums that she's doing. Because you know, she has been going back and re-recording her first six albums that were owned by her first label to give her the rights to the masters and all of that. So all of that's dropping too. And we're in this weird situation now where, and this is how the conversation came up last night for a couple of reasons. One, because there's this concert film, and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that a little later. The current big hit Taylor Swift single is a song called Cruel Summer, which is actually like 4 or 5 years old. It's not on her current album. It's from like 3 albums back. And I'm like, how did that happen? You know, what's going on there? And what my friend informed me is that it's a song that everybody that's a Swiftie wanted to be a single when it first came out. And for some reason it wasn't. And like every summer it's kind of resurged again with, you know, getting a lot of organic listening, even though it wasn't a single per se. And this year, compound that with the tour and all the hoopla and all of that. And I guess the song has been like a centerpiece in her live shows. It got so much streaming that it started charting. And the label just finally said, okay, well, we'll give the people what they want. And they released it as a single. And
that's really interesting stuff. I feel like at some point a conversation has to be had about whether or not Taylor Swift is the single biggest pop star of all time. I think she's had over 30 number one singles, or at least like top 10. I don't quote me on that.
It's such an apples to oranges comparison when you're comparing her to anybody that's come before her, because the entire business model has changed so many times over the course of the past, let's say, 50 years.
Doesn't that make it more impressive, though?
Keep in mind that it used to be if you wanted to hear music, you had to go out and buy it, or you had to call your radio station and ask them to play it. It was not available at your fingertips at all hours of the day on demand for whatever song you wanted to hear.
Sure.
So that's a big difference. There is a lot more, let's say, there's an enthusiasm thing there where you had to be enthusiastic enough to get off your butt and go to a record store and purchase a record that you saved up money for.
Point taken.
And then take it home and listen to it. Versus, oh, I want to hear the song. Click, click, song's playing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's that. There's a lot of other factors. Am I willing to say that she's bigger than the Beatles or bigger than Madonna or bigger than, you know, Michael Jackson at his height?
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's so many different artists you could name, and there's so many pros and cons to each of them that it's hard to say. Am I going to say she's in the upper echelon? Yeah, I'd have to say she is. Yeah, I mean, you'd be foolish.
Top five, I would say. Maybe top three to me.
It's just so hard for me to say that about somebody that's still very relatively earlier in their career, despite, again, being, you know, 10 albums deep. And, I mean, we're talking about somebody that's only been in the business for like 13, 14 years.
And you're comparing that to recency bias, though, right? Like, yeah. While because she's contemporary, we can't look at her through the same lens that we would look at somebody like the Beatles. But I wonder in 20, 30 years, if she has the same sort of staying power, right?
It's hard to have that kind of perspective, and it's hard to know until we've reached the perspective of time that allows for that. But by any measure, it's an incredible career. And by any measure, she's certainly one of the most popular and influential artists who've ever lived in terms of music. I mean, there's just no denying that when you're looking at maybe we're not seeing the album sales, although we're seeing album sales, just, you know, it's not the same as it used to be back in the day, but the ticket sales.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I do have the same friend that I was speaking of compared it to Beatlemania. And I don't know, 'cause I didn't live through it, but, you know, it kind of feels like it in some ways. And when you talk about that, she's got a concert film coming that they just announced, and immediately on the first day tickets went on sale, sold $10 million worth of tickets for a concert film in less than 24 hours. That's almost unheard of. So maybe we'll talk about this a little more after the break. We got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Yeah.
fever dream high in the quiet of the night. You know that I caught it. Bad, bad boy, shiny toy with a price. You know that I bought it. Killing me slow, out the window. I'm always waiting for you to be waiting below. Devils roll the dice, angels roll their eyes. What doesn't kill me makes me want you more.
Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube. And there it is, the current big hit by Taylor Swift, Cruel Summer. Despite the fact that the song is 4 years old, that is the current hit single from Taylor Swift. Despite the fact that she has a very acclaimed album out this year that everybody just kind of fell over and was doing very well too, but for some reason the fans decided they wanted this to be the single and like right now, and the demand is just there. Let's see, I'm just pulling up the current Billboard chart to see where that is sitting right now. It is not.
And in the meantime, I want to do a little cleanup on the last segment and say Taylor Swift has had 42 songs in the top 10 on the Billboard charts, 9 number one singles. As of 2019, she has more AMA awards than Michael Jackson. However, Michael Jackson is still in the Guinness Book of World Records for being the most awarded and celebrated artist of all time. I don't think it's comparable as far as music. Michael Jackson is just in a galaxy of his own. We got to give it up to her. So what did you find there?
So it is currently sitting at number 4 on the Billboard charts. And interestingly enough, considering Taylor Swift is a former country artist,
yeah.
I think that's fair to say. I don't think that anybody is going to claim that she's a current country artist. I think that it's fair to say former country artist. But it's currently sitting behind, it looks to me like, I'm assuming, because I've only heard a little bit about this song that's at the top of the charts right now, Oliver Anthony Music's Richmond North of Richmond, which I believe is another song that kind of falls into the blue collar, right wing, kind of try that in a small town, kind of vibe. That is the number one song in the country right now. And I did just look him up. Yes, it is a country song, country folk singer. Number two, the cover of Tracy Chapman's Fast Car by Luke Combs. It has been unavoidable this year.
It has,
which is a really solid cover and brings to mind some interesting issues too. But I think it's great to see that song celebrated, and the fact that you have now had a number one country single written by a queer black woman, which is unheard of.
And such a great song.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the original. I bought that album when it first came out, and I think Tracy Chapman's amazing. And then at number three is Morgan Wallen, another country artist, with Last Night. So the top three on the pop chart our country songs, which is also something I think that might be unprecedented.
It seems like it.
I cannot think of a time when that's been, unless I've missed something, which is possible. It's possible I've missed something there, but each of the Morgan Wallen song is a former number one. The Luke Combs song has just stuck at number two. Like, it has not been able to get to number one for some reason, but it's stuck at number two. And then Taylor's song that we just played peaked at number three. It's currently at number four. You know, it's really interesting. Like, the other thing we're looking at, I'm looking at the top 10 here right now. And you've also got two songs from the Barbie soundtrack in the top 10. One of which is the redone version of Barbie World,
mm-hmm.
or Barbie Girl, which samples it's Barbie World, but it samples Barbie Girl, and Aqua's credited on the single.
Sure.
So that's interesting. And then you have the Dua Lipa songs in there too. And then, yeah, man, I don't know what to say there, but you know, again, you're in, you've got this song from a 4-year-old album that's sitting at number 4 on the pop charts right now, versus the most current single from Taylor's current album, which is called Karma, is sitting at number 15 right now. Now, that peaked at number 2, so that had a bit of a run too. But you know, Anti-Hero is still sitting in the top 20. That was a number 1 single. It's been on the charts for almost a full year now, 44 weeks, and it's still in the top 20. So that's saying something too. And I'm just looking to see what else she's got sitting, if she's got anything else sitting in the top 40 here, just out of curiosity. There's a lot of artists we're in this weird era too, where artists have multiple songs in the top 40 at the same time. It didn't used to be the way. It's the way streaming has democratized popular music in a lot of ways, that, she doesn't have anything else currently sitting in the top 40, but, you know, we also had a situation where earlier this year she had, what was it, 9 of the top 10 albums at the same time, and which hadn't happened since the 60s.
Yeah, that's unreal.
So, I mean, you know, when we get back to discussing, is she in the top 2 or 3 artists of all time in terms of overall popularity and influence, maybe she is.
Yeah, it's and you know, I'm not even that big a fan. Like, I like a couple of her singles, all right, I guess. You and I were, you know, you'd mentioned Anti-Hero, which is a more recent song of hers. She's got a couple of really good, catchy songs, but
I mean, there's some great hooks. You know, even the stuff that I'm kind of down on, like, you can't tell me that a song like Shake It Off or We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together doesn't get stuck in your head.
They're earworms, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, she's got away with a hook. There's no doubt about that. I'm looking at the album charts here, and she currently has 3 albums in the top 10. The Midnight's being the current album. That's her current highest charting album at number 5, but it's a former number 1. The re-recorded version of Speak Now is sitting at number 7. That's also a former number 1. And then Lover, the 4-year-old album that's got Cruel Summer on it, is sitting at number 8. That's also a former number 1. So, and then she's got, she's sitting right below at number 13 with Folklore, number 17 with 1989, which has been out for, several years now. I think that's getting ready to come up on the re-recorded sessions. She's got literally like 8 albums in the top 30 right now.
Talk about being able to galvanize a fan base to buy the same stuff twice. That's really interesting. And I don't know, do they sound different? Maybe. I don't know if it's just a straightforward redoing of the previous albums, but that is very telling in the amount her fans care about her. And you know, there's the whole other thing where she like paid all of her tour bus drivers over $100,000 for driving for her tour, and like,
yeah, which I really respect. I think that's amazing.
A lot.
She shelled out some
big bonuses.
These are the kind of
cool things that make it easy to root for her.
Yeah, she shared in the success of her tour with everybody that worked on the tour, and there's not everybody does that.
No.
I really do really, really respect that. I think that's, if nothing else, even if I hated every bit of music that she does, I would have to take my hat off to her for that. I think that's pretty freaking amazing.
Yeah, and Dua Lipa is another one of these pop stars that's having a year. She was featured heavily in Barbie, you know, had an acting role in it, and last night we were kind of browsing Netflix, and my wife and I saw that there's a new Adam Sandler movie on Netflix called You're So Not Invited to My Bar Mitzvah, which kind of the gimmick of it, I guess, is that it stars all of the Sandlers. Like, Adam Sandler's whole family actually has roles and play his family in it. And then Dua Lipa's music is, I think she's probably got 3 songs featured in this one movie. So it's been a big year for her as well.
Yeah, and you know, again, like I said, her song from the Barbie soundtrack is sitting in the top 10 right now, and the Barbie soundtrack itself is sitting in the top 10 right now. So, I mean, I think, you know, going back to what we were saying earlier in the show about, you know, are we looking at retargeting where things are going to be aimed? I think it depends on whether the, you know, the big entertainment companies take the right lesson from the success of these things.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, I know Randall Park, the actor director, had made some comments about that Hollywood needs to learn from the success of Barbie, that they need to make more women focused on more movies focused on women, not more movies focused on toys.
Toys, yeah, very, very astutely put.
Yeah, it's making sure that we learn the right lesson. And the same thing with the success of Taylor Swift. Does that mean it's time to make more room for other female voices? Well, you know, maybe it does. You know, I'm looking just at the top 10 on the pop charts right now. And I'm seeing, aside from these top three songs by these country guys, two of which have had some political issues, let's just say. You know, Morgan Wallen liked to use the N-word until somebody
is
told him.
Is that Morgan Wallen, hard R, Morgan?
Yeah, yeah. and then, you know, this Richmond, north of Richmond, you know, you can kind of just tell by the title on that where that's going.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to look up the lyrics.
So, but you get past that into the rest of the top 10, and you've got Taylor Swift, you've got Doja Cat, you've got Selena Gomez, who's also having a lot of success on streaming with Only Murders in the Building right now. She's on a song with Rima. I don't know Rima, but I'm assuming that's female artist as well. And Olivia Rodrigo, who just dropped a new album, Dua Lipa, and then the Barbie world that samples Aqua's Barbie Girl, but that's Nicki Minaj and Ice Spice. So again, female artists there as well. So, you know, there's a lot of women having a lot of success right now, and I think that's pretty amazing. You know, like I said, let's see if what lessons the entertainment world takes from that. Do we see more women given a shot and to try to do their things and to make their voices heard and to not have it just be, you know, at the risk of sounding like I'm oversimplifying, that it's not just, you know, oh, look, here's, you know, scantily clad women that, you know, you need to pay attention to because they're scantily clad versus actually having something to say.
Let me ask you this. Is there something different between a movie like Barbie and a female-led Star Wars property like Ahsoka?
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's discuss that after the break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube. And that is What Was I Made For by Billie Eilish, one of the many songs off the Barbie soundtrack. And one of the many hits off the Barbie soundtrack, although not quite as big a hit as some of the more upbeat stuff. And you can kind of understand why. That's more of like a, if you saw the movie, that's like the scene where like Barbie's having the existential crisis and, you know, you're getting into the whole history of the Barbie doll and everything. So it's really written to go with the movie, but still, you know, to have a pop hit with a song like that, that's like you wouldn't expect to hear that on pop radio, but it's still a pop hit. And that brings me back to where we were before the break, where you had a question for me, Jeremy.
So this has turned into us discussing just how female-centric the end of the summer in particular has been in regards to music and in regards to film. And it got me thinking about a franchise like, well, Star Wars specifically, right, where we talked about learning the right versus the wrong message in regards to moving forward in female-based properties, intellectual properties. And I asked you if you thought there was a difference between something like Barbie versus something like Star Wars. And maybe this is an overgeneralization, and I know you and I both know many female fans of the Star Wars franchise, but something that may be traditionally thought of as male-driven, or at least the target demographic, and then, you know, under the Disney banner in particular, it's almost as if they've reconfigured Star Wars to try to reach a more female audience. And the question that I ask you specifically is, do you feel that there's something different between Barbie and Ahsoka in regards to female audiences?
I'm not sure how to answer that question, because I think that Ahsoka is kind of in a place where, and I haven't seen the show yet, so I'm not saying this based on the quality of the show or anything like that, but it's in a place where it's got a built-in audience. Like there's no guy that's like totally into Star Wars that's not going to watch it because it's got a girl in the lead.
Okay.
Or you know, by the same token, I don't know that it's drawing any new women to the franchise. I'm not sure if it is or not. We'll see. But this is a character that's got a long history in animation, and, you know, in live action too, having appeared in Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett. So it's not something that's new to the world. You know, there's a history there. I don't know that it brings in that much of a new audience. And this is a character too, that while it is a character that is definitely female and has a female point of view, that everybody knows is very much driven by Dave Filoni, who is not a female. You know, this was his character that he created, that he loved and he has nurtured. And that's not to say that she's not a great female character, a great female role model. Certainly her original voice actress, Ashley Eckstein, has become a big female role model in the nerd world. Has started her own clothing company called Her Universe that has been hugely successful. You go to a con that she's at, her lines are some of the biggest lines at the convention.
Mm-hmm.
She's a great person, and she's definitely an inspirational figure. But there's a certain creative energy there that is not necessarily female energy, that I don't think is the same energy that's behind something like Barbie or Taylor Swift or you know. Not that any of these people don't also work with men. There were certainly, you know, Noah Baumbach co-wrote the screenplay for Barbie, but
sure.
And that maybe that gets overlooked a little bit in all the rush to praise Greta Gerwig, who I love and who deserves every bit of praise that she can get. Go back and watch Lady Bird; it's an amazing movie. Go back and watch her version of Little Women; it's an amazing movie. She directed this; she co-wrote it. It is very much her vision. Noah Baumbach happens to be her romantic partner as well as being her writing partner in this. And it is a pretty solid filmmaker in his own right, if you haven't seen any of his films. So it's funny to kind of like say that the movie based on the toy plastic doll that's been around since the 1950s has maybe got a little bit more organic feminist roots to it, but it kind of does.
Yeah, I think all great points. All great points. And I actually agree with everything you said there. I do feel like there's a different creative energy, and I think that might be the key to it, right? Because when we look at, and I don't, you know, far be it from me to say what's cynical moves made by executives that might not have their finger on the pulse as well, but when you look at Ahsoka, it's not just Ahsoka, like Sabine and Hera, and there are multiple really prominent female characters in it, but I've looked at Star Wars for a couple years now and wondered that kind of question. Is trying to target a demographic that might not organically be as invested, is that a smart decision? Is it really bringing in outsiders? Is it isolating the, and I mean, we can see in many cases it does isolate this very devout male sector of the audience, whether that's good or bad or not. I just wonder, is there a way that you could do Star Wars that would bring in a female audience, or is the idea to just give female audiences something that is a little more tailored to them?
I think that there is already a much larger female audience for Star Wars than people realize.
Mm.
I think that there still tends to be this perspective that people look on Star Wars as primarily a male audience, and I think that's a mistake. I think it's pretty close to evenly divided. So I'm not sure how much they need to draw more women in, because women already love Star Wars.
Just for anecdotal, would you say it's a 60-40 split? Would you say it's a 70-30 split? Like, where do you think
I might say 60-40. Yeah.
Okay.
We're pretty close to that. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to quantify, but I think that at the same time, while I'm kind of criticizing with one hand that there's not, this isn't necessarily bringing anybody new into the fandom, I don't think Star Wars is having a whole lot of problem with bringing people into the fandom, because it's already got such a huge fandom. I don't feel like the fandom's aging out. I think that new kids come into the fandom every year, unlike some other things that I could name that where the fandoms are aging out. I don't think Star Wars has I don't think Star Wars has a problem, but I also don't think Star Wars is going out of its way to pander. And I don't think it should go out of its way to pander, but I think it should feature female-driven stories, and I'm glad that it is.
Yeah, we had Howard, what's her name? Ron Howard's daughter.
Bryce Dallas Howard.
Bryce Dallas Howard directed a couple episodes of some of the Star Wars shows, and it's just cool to get, you know, more female-driven projects. I guess my biggest frame of reference is my wife into it, or does she look at it as being this other thing? And if it's the same in your house and your wife is into it, then it probably affects our perspectives of it a little bit. But to your point, I'm sure that there were girls that were watching Clone Wars and Rebels as young people that are now turning into teenagers and maybe young adults that are watching Ahsoka and really feeling seen and like it is speaking to them. So I guess that's a whole sector of the fandom that like I forget to consider, you know?
Well, and I just wanted, before we run out the segment, you know, we're talking about this whole female perspective, and there's another movie that just came out that I want to mention called Bottoms, which very, very much has a female perspective. It's very funny. It's written and directed by, directed by Emma Seligman, who co-wrote the movie with Rachel Sennett, who is one of the stars of the film, along with Ayo Edebiri from The Bear. Ruby Cruz, who was in Willow, is in this too. And then it's a really funny movie that takes a lot of the tropes of the 80s teen sex comedy, but does it from an LGBTQ point of view. The two lead actresses, the characters are lesbians, and they're wanting to get laid. And they come up with this complicated plot to try to get the cheerleaders to have sex with them. And, you know, so it's got some of that. It's got some of the satire of a movie like Heathers. But it's definitely coming from a very fresh female point of view, and it's something I really appreciated about the movie. And it's about the funniest thing you ever want to see. So, you know, make some time to go see that movie if you get a chance. It's absolutely hilarious, and I think you'll love it. Got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, I wanted to try to spend a little bit of time catching up on some stuff before the end of the show, but we're both kind of in a situation where we've been pretty busy lately. And, you know, I guess like that song just said, we used to be fun. great song, by the way. Teen Jesus and the Gene Teasers is the name of that band, and I love that song. It's one of my favorite songs right now. But you know, we used to be able to keep up with everything, and there's just so much, and I think both of us have just had so much going on in our lives that we're kind of behind a little bit on some series that we would probably normally be talking about on a regular basis, and one of which being Ahsoka, which I know you said you saw the first two episodes of. I haven't seen any of it yet. So we're three episodes into the season, but you've seen the first two. And just kind of give me a no spoilers how you're feeling about it so far.
So Ahsoka is a mini series that they decided to release the first two episodes at one time. And I think that really does work to the show's benefit for a couple of reasons, but primarily because a lot of the people that are watching Ahsoka won't have seen Rebels and won't have seen Clone Wars, which is where a lot of these characters are introduced. So episode one ends up doing a lot of place setting, kind of establishing where we're at in the timeline, kind of establishing who these characters are and what their relationships are with each other. And then two is kind of where we're off to the races and this story itself is starting to progress. And it's a really good looking show. I know Dave Filoni is responsible for bringing these characters to life, and now he's bringing them to live action. And I like the cast. Like, each of the people playing the characters are great. This is Ray Stevenson's last performance, and so far he is incredible in his role. Rosario Dawson is awesome.
Rosario Dawson and Mary Elizabeth Winstead. That's all I need to know. I'm going to watch the two of them read the phone book. You know, that's.
And you basically will be watching them read the phone book. In some ways, there's so many close-up shots of them doing like puzzle-solving things that take up way too much of the runtime in the first episode, and they have to do like a bunch of Star Wars music to kind of make it feel like something exciting is happening. So the pacing's a little bit weird. And while I love these characters in animation, I feel like the adaptation didn't really do a lot of favors in the aesthetic department. There's some uncanny valley stuff going on, and I've never been really wild about Jedi's doing the flippity flips and jumping 30 feet and all that kind of stuff that we got introduced to in Lucas's prequel trilogy. There's a lot of that stuff that carries over in this one. But that said, there's a lot to like about it. I feel like it's kind of towards the top tier of the live action Star Wars, kind of on par with series one of The Mandalorian.
Well, interesting. I'm glad to hear that it does some of the play setting for you, because I have not completely caught up on Clone Wars and Rebels yet. I'm making my way through it, but you know, little chunks at a time. So I want to start watching this, and I don't want to have to wait until I catch up on all that. So I'm glad there's a primer, for lack of a better term, at the beginning of the first episode. Kind of stinks that they have to do that, but I get it at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes a lot of sense, and I think this is one we'll we'll circle back around to maybe, you know, next time you get caught up, definitely when the season ends, because I think there's going to be some really cool stuff to talk about.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Well, one show that I know that we both love that has been back, and I think we're both just a couple episodes behind, is Reservation Dogs. Is FX on Hulu. And we're in the final season of this great series. We're only getting three seasons of this show. Not because the studio has canceled it, but because the producers have decided they've come to where they want to go with us, which is good. You know, I'd rather that it not be either artificially prolonged or chopped off too soon. So we're going to get a complete story here. And I have loved the show and loved these characters. And I'm very glad to have it back, and I have enjoyed this season so far. I know you were kind of trepidatious about where this was going at first, but then you felt like it got back on track. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. The bare solo missions were good, but it kind of detracted from the things that I really love about this series, and that's the interplay between our main cast. And you and I have been carrying the torch for Reservation Dogs ever since it started, and I feel like, unlike something like The Bear, it just hasn't caught the culture in the way that I think it should. I feel like if more people watched it, then these conversations wouldn't just be had between me and you. But I think it's one of the best series that's come on in a couple of years, you know?
Yeah, everybody I know that has taken the time to watch it has fallen in love with it.
Yep.
It's just, I for some reason, it's just not getting in front of as many eyes. And the same with, like, when you're talking about, like, the critics have loved it, but it hasn't gotten the awards attention, and that's really bothered me.
Yep.
You know, I would really like to, it's not for anything this year's Emmys, which are delayed by the strike. So I really hope they recognize it in its last season, because it really is just one of the freshest and most original shows on television, and it deserves some recognition before it goes away. This cast is fantastic. The writing is fantastic.
Out of a different kind of category of storytelling, there's a couple of docuseries over on HBO Max that I think people definitely need to check out. The first one being Telemarketers, which is about a huge national telemarketing scam that went on that many of our listeners probably succumbed to the temptation of funding these people. So that's a really interesting one. And then How To with John Wilson. This is season 3. He's got a really unique and interesting perspective. The series is brought to you by executive producer Nathan Fielder. So if you're into Nathan Fielder for you, or more recently The Rehearsal, I think that these are both series that you'll really enjoy.
Cool. Well, and I know that we're both enjoying Harley Quinn, which is back on now it's Max. This is
yep.
a series that has gone through three different streaming services at this point, because it started on DC Universe. And then it was HBO Max, and now it's Max. And it's all still the same company, because all of those are Warner Brothers companies. But because of the way the world has worked over the last few years, it's gone through three different brands, I guess, for lack of a better term. But just amazingly consistent writing and animation and voice acting. You know, not afraid to go over the top, but still very, very funny. And these characters have had heart, and they've grown over the course of this series. And it's been really interesting to see that even when Harley and Ivy are at odds, they still come together as a couple and care for each other.
It's really interesting. It's really interesting. And I don't know how many people are watching this one, but again, it's a series that you and I have been just speaking so highly about week after week. And I don't know if the hot potato Harley of being ping ponged around different networks has played a factor in why it just doesn't seem to be getting the recognition that it deserves, but it's another one that anybody that has actually sat down and watched it really enjoys it.
Well, we are supposed to still be getting the Kite Man spinoff series.
So, okay.
Yeah. So that is still supposedly coming. So it must be successful enough that they felt like they could spin another series off of it. I had been concerned with this shift in the overall DC programming, but I think they're going to stick that Elseworlds label on it and keep it going. At least I hope so.
Good.
I'd like to see another season of this. I don't want this show to go away. I've really enjoyed Kaley Cuoco in the role, and just what she has brought to that. And you know what? It brings to mind something that we need to mention here as we close out the show. And that is, Harley Quinn comes from a very interesting place. Harley Quinn is one of just a few characters in the DC pantheon that didn't originate in the comics. There's a few of them. Jimmy Olsen is one. Jimmy Olsen originated in the radio program. Livewire, the Superman villain, originated in Superman, the animated series. There's a few of them here and there. Harley Quinn is one of them. Harley Quinn was created for Batman, the animated series, which debuted just about 30 years ago, believe it or not. She was created for that show. She was created with the inspiration of the actor who initially played her in the series. She was originally played by a woman named Arlene Sorkin, and the character was created by Bruce Timm and Paul Dini, and they based her and based her mannerisms on Arlene Sorkin, who's a great actress. If you watch Days of Our Lives in the 80s, which is a stretch maybe here, but she was on that show, and she was in like a kind of, her and another actor were like the kooky offbeat couple on the show. And the other actor was John DeLancey, who went on to be Q in Star Trek. So they both went on to be science fiction and fantasy and nerd icons, basically. So Harley Quinn, if you love Harley Quinn, a lot of what you love is you love Arlene Sorkin, because the character is very much based on her. And she was the original voice actor. She was the voice actor all throughout Batman the Animated Series and all those original animated movies and things like that until she left the role. And I know a lot of people maybe know Tara Strong for the role better now, or, you know, Kaley Cuoco from this series. But Arlene Sorkin is the original, and she is the basis for this character. And unfortunately, we lost Arlene Sorkin over the last week or so. She has passed away. So I'm glad that the subject of the show came up, because I really did want to make sure we said something about her and how much she will be missed and what a legacy she leaves behind, and that this character has just become this icon. You know, we haven't even talked about Margot Robbie playing her in live action. We're going to get a movie next year with Lady Gaga playing her. All this developed out of, you know, this affection that these two guys had for this one woman and thought she'd be a neat basis for a character. It's amazing. So rest in peace, Arlene Sorkin. We've got to go. We'll be back next week. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.